from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Mark Bittman has established quite a following as a weekly columnist of The Minimalist for The New York Times and a regular on The Today Show. The author of a new book called The Food Matters. He'll join us for the hour ahead to discuss eating and recipes and how you can lose weight and heal the planet. Forum is next with your calls, emails, and your online questions and comments after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum, our second hour. Mark Bittman is with us this hour. He's author of How to Cook Everything and a number of other cookbooks, as well as the weekly column The Minimalist, which appears in The New York Times. He appears regularly on The Today Show and publishes in many newspapers and magazines, and he's been writing exclusively about food for the past 3 decades and for The New York Times for the last 2. His newest book is called The Food Matters Cookbook, 500 Revolutionary Recipes for Better Living. It's been described as half cookbook, half manifesto. In it, he takes on factory farming and the health impact of a diet too heavily based on meat and processed food with recipes for a healthy and environmentally sustained diet. And Mark Bittman joins us for this forum hour. Good to have you here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome. Well, let's see. Where do we begin talking with you? So many things to talk about, including some recipes that people are going to be very excited about, I think. I want to talk about you first, though, because you've got such a following. And suddenly I discover you were a small-time journalist. You were a community organizer like our president, a cab driver, a teacher, a salesman. I mean, quite a varied background.
Well, I didn't know what I was going to do. What can I say? That all happened between the age of 20 and 30. So, you know,
but
one tries many things.
You found your métier, huh?
Well, I was I was a community organizer, and of course that doesn't pay any money. And then I had children and I had to make some money, so I became a traveling salesman. But during that, when I was a community organizer, I ran a small paper, so I learned some of those skills. And then I was cooking. That whole decade I was cooking. And then in 1980, I walked into the arts editor of the local weekly paper and talked myself into a food writing gig and just sort of went from there.
Well, it's gone in different directions because from cooking in the kitchen and being a pretty good cook, from what I understand, you've become kind of a man who supplies recipes and all kinds of hints in the culinary world, but now maybe even kind of a crusader. I mean, this book has that element to it.
I guess I say advocate, but yeah. What I think is interesting, and we can get into the details, but in terms of my life, what I think is interesting and something I'm very happy about is that, you know, I was a community organizer because I believed in certain things. I became a food writer because I liked to cook and I wanted to write. And I thought, well, this is a career I can live with. And then as the years went by, I thought, well, this is actually a career that has some good aspects to it. And then as more years went by, I thought, I'm actually doing some good in this world, which was very pleasing. But now I'm back to community organizing. I mean, I'm really, I'm going to be at the Herb Center tonight. And I give these talks and I feel like I'm kind of a rabble rouser at this point.
Yeah, you're with Ruth Reichel.
Which is fun.
Tonight,
yeah.
We should mention,
at
the Herb Center. We'll give a plug for that. And Steve Wynn's going to be interviewing the two of you, talking with the two of you. Yeah, rabble rouser who has the anthem, well, lose weight, heal the planet.
Well, my first anthem was anyone can cook and almost everybody should, which I think is primary and is important. But excuse me. Let me do this. Cough. But now I do feel like the important thing is to point out the problems of industrially raised food and to point out the links between that and our diet and the environment.
You're also talking about wholesome food. That word keeps coming up. Slim down because if you essentially cut back on animal products and junk food and eat more produce and whole grains, you're going to be healthier and, well, it's going to sustain the planet more. Well, so easy equation.
Yeah. It is an easy equation, and plants are clearly more sustainable than processed food or animal products. Wholesome is a good word. Natural used to be a good word. It seems that anytime a good word comes along, the industry co-opts it. But we know what we're talking about when we talk about natural food or wholesome food for that matter. And it basically means unprocessed fruits and vegetables, legumes and nuts and seeds and whole grains. I mean, that's what should comprise the majority of our diet. And that's what sadly makes up maybe 10 or 20% of our calorie intake.
I noticed that one of your, mentors and maybe even idols, it wouldn't be too strong to say, was Julia Child. And I remember interviewing Julia Child and Jacques Pepin, and we got into this whole discussion about, well, I mean, she was a meat advocate. She was really, in fact, very strong about the idea of meat. And you seem to be now, especially with global warming, understandably, talking a very different tune.
Well, she was not, I spoke in L.A. last night, and I found myself calling myself slow to react and kind of idiotic twice. I was being amusing, but I was being serious too. But she was very, very slow to change her mind about things. And in her mind, even talking about eating Chinese food was an adventurous topic. So she dug in her heels and said, they say we can eat 2 tablespoons of butter a day, and damn it, I'm eating 2 tablespoons of butter a day. And she lived her entire life that way of sort of defending the ground she had staked out.
Speaking about staked out, I mean, so many of these meat studies seem to show that, it's not necessarily the bane of health that many of the vegans and others who have been on this program have tried to present.
It's a matter of quantity. Well, it's both.
Yeah.
The industrially raised meat, the UNFAO says industrially raised meat is responsible for 18% of greenhouse gases. Whether it's 10% or 30% or 18%, no one really knows. But it's a significant amount. So that's bad. But no matter how meat is raised, it's unsustainable for us to be eating it in the quantity that Americans eat it. So Americans kill 60 billion, that's with a B, animals a year. And globally, it's 120 billion. I'm sorry, I got that wrong. Americans kill 10 billion and globally it's 60 billion. But it's projected to be 120 billion within 20 or 30 years. And there's not enough land, there's not enough water, there's not enough fertilizer for that to actually happen. So that's the definition of overshoot or unsustainable or whatever you want to call it. So it's not that meat per se is bad. It's the quantities of it that are bad.
Yeah, I read something that really kind of rocked me. Your book, Fish, which is all about, fish and how you can eat fish in different delightful ways. You couldn't update that book. Let me see if I understand this correctly, because too many of the 70 species that you wrote about have disappeared.
Well, I would find it – first of all, there are people – and now I'm going to plug a friend of mine, people like Paul Greenberg, who have done such great work on fish that it will be hard for me to catch up. So that's one thing. But another is that a lot of the species from – I wrote that book in the early 90s, but I really learned about fish in the 80s. A lot of those species are either nearly gone or threatened. And it's hard to say, well, you should be cooking this wonderful healthy food when in fact the species is nearly extinct. And that stuff changes so fast. Every time we anoint a new species as underutilized, it immediately becomes overutilized. So it's just too many people eating wild fish for it to work. I will also, if we're talking about fish, I will say that a lot of the reasons for overfishing is that fish, there's a tremendous amount of what's called bycatch, which basically means not if you're not fishing for the fish that you're – if you're not catching the fish you're fishing for, you tend to throw it out if you're a factory vessel. So those fish are killed unnecessarily. And there are a lot of fish that are killed for fertilizer and fish that are killed to feed other fish. So we catch vegetarian or vegetable-eating fish in order to feed them to carnivorous fish so we can eat farmed salmon and increasingly farmed tuna. And to me, this makes no sense whatsoever. These conversion rates are crazy.
Talking to Mark Bittman, food writer, author, columnist for New York Times, and author of a new book called Food Matters, 500 Revolutionary Recipes for Better Living. He'll be at City Arts and Lectures, Herb Theater tonight, 8 o'clock, in conversation with Ruth Reichel, moderated by Steve Wynn. Let's talk about some of these recipes. I noticed they've even got you on TV talking about ricotta cheese gnocchi, which I thought was a terrific recipe.
That's more of a minimalist recipe than a Food Matters cookbook recipe, but it's an interesting recipe because gnocchi, when made with potatoes, as most are, can be quite tricky. But when you're just binding a little bit of cheese or a lot of cheese with a little bit of flour and just poaching them, you make really, really fast and easy gnocchi. So, yeah, that's a web video. We do these New York Times web videos, which are quite popular. So.
Well, you've done some – let's talk about some of the recipes that you've got here in this book. Thanksgiving's coming up, and you've got Thanksgiving roast root vegetables and turkey with pan juices. Sounds pretty good to me.
The deal with Food Matters cookbook is going back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, what I'm advocating is basically changing the proportions of foods in our diet. We get something like 80% of our calories from animal products and processed food. And if we were to get 80% of our calories from plants, we and the planet would be far healthier. So the basic thrust of Food Matters cookbook is to showcase recipes that do exactly that. So roasted root vegetables, it's a bit extreme for a traditional Thanksgiving, I have to admit. But roasted root vegetables with turkey is, instead of having an 18-pound bird on your table, it's having a ton of root vegetables on your table with some turkey in it. And that's typical. It's not going to fly for lots of people. And if you have 15 people at your Thanksgiving table or 20, then you want a big bird, no question. But if you have four people or you want to use turkey and leftovers, that's an awesome recipe. Maybe a better example is just one that I think is very archetypical of the book is I used to make, if you look in how to cook everything, I would make a beef stew with maybe 2 pounds of beef and a half a pound of vegetables for flavor and texture and color variety. And in Food Matters Cookbook, there's a recipe called mushroom stew with beef, which is basically 2 pounds of vegetables with half a pound of beef. And the beef is providing the nice chew and some flavor, the texture we all love, etc. But it's a vegetable dish. It's a vegetable dish with beef instead of a beef dish with vegetables. Very simple.
By the way, we've been plugging your event tonight. It's sold out.
Yeah, I know that. They're scalping tickets, actually.
Are they? Yeah. Yeah, the World Series and it's is a competition here, in fact. How about hummus served hot?
Well, that's actually traditional.
What does that have to do with sustaining the planet and all that?
Well, to me, any bean dish that you – any bean dish –
it's the hummus. It's not the fact that it's hot.
No, well, it's unusual that it's served hot. Yeah.
You like hot hummus.
It's warm. It's good. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I like warm hummus too. I don't know about hot hummus, but warm hummus. Not your usual steak fajitas you have here?
Again, more vegetables than meat. So instead of starting with, let's – grill up a bunch of steak with a couple of vegetables for color and accent and so on. Let's grill up a bunch of vegetables with some steak on the side. Saying it almost sounds absurd because as soon as you say it, anyone can figure this out. People like cookbooks. I mean, I sell a lot of cookbooks, so I'm not ashamed of this, but it is a very simple concept and it's a very sensible concept.
How do you generally talk about cutting down on meat?
Well, I think there are two ways. You can organize your life in a way that more of your meals have fewer animal products in them, which I've done, and I talk about this. I don't think this is not necessarily an example for other people to follow. There are lots of ways to do this, but what I do is I eat as a fairly strict vegan from morning until night. So my breakfasts and lunch and midday snacks, etc., all again, unprocessed fruits and vegetables and the like. And then at dinner, I do pretty much what I want to do. So I figure that I've changed my percentage of calories in my diet from maybe 80% from meat and processed food to maybe 50 or 60%. I mean, which is a radical change. It's a big change. There are lots of ways you can do this. You can only eat four-legged animals on Tuesday. There's anything you could. I have a friend who eats meat 5 tons a month religiously. You know, you can take weekends off from eating meat, or you can take weekdays off from eating meat. Anything you can imagine you can do. And different people have different styles and need to figure out different ways to do this. The other thing is to cook recipes that have less meat in them, and that's what Food Matters Cookbook's about.
In fact, you mentioned being a vegan or almost a vegan, and there was a woman named Caroline Cummins who writes for Culinate who said this is really a book on how to become a vegan.
Well, you know what's funny is I have no intention. I would not say never, but I have no intention of becoming a vegan. But if you look at, say, an omnivorous end of the spectrum and a vegan end of the spectrum, or probably actually more extreme than omnivorous is a typical American diet because it's eating so much junk. And the other end of the spectrum is the vegan end of the spectrum. If you see veganism as a goal, to me, it doesn't matter whether you get there. But if you're moving in that direction, you're moving in the right direction. I don't particularly see it as a goal, but it's sort of an ideal, but one that I wouldn't push anyone to achieve, but it's the direction in which you want to move. Sounds almost religious, but
yeah, no, I mean, you're sort of on board with people like Pollan, really, and
we
maybe
have differences,
even Francis Moore LePay.
We all have differences, but we're certainly all on the same side.
We got a TLB, tomato, lettuce, and bacon sandwich.
Same thing. It's de-emphasizing the meat and emphasizing the vegetables.
Would you recommend, in terms of really spicing things up for those, like Dean Ornish was in here recently, you know, he's got these cookbooks, and some of us who really are carnivores, I mean, it can't help being carnivores.
Right.
I like what you're doing here, where you're suggesting, you know, diminishing the meat and getting a better taste of it.
I never say to people, don't eat meat. Never would, so.
But I'm also wondering for those who want to go more on that continuum toward the vegan, how they can find the real substitutes, because so many of them seem like kind of faux surrogates until you get used to them. And then when you get used to them, it's much easier, I suppose.
I guess I'm not really interested in convincing anyone who doesn't want to be. I have I think veganism is a very high ideal and quite admirable, but I have no interest in pushing people to become vegans. It would be hypocritical if I did. And I also think that, you know, you can be a vegan and eat badly also. It's about the quality of the ingredients, the freshness of the ingredients, the realness of the ingredients. So if you're out there eating tofu hot dogs on white bread, that is not a healthy diet as far as I'm concerned. That's a lousy diet.
You know, a lot of people, the weeknight staples for families are pork chops or other quick, easy meats, things of that sort. And do you have any sort of quick suggestions to replace those sorts of things?
I would say if those are the things you like to eat, eat them in smaller quantities and eat them fewer nights a week. And then on the other nights, I mean, if people actually like rice and beans. People like big salads. People like vegetable soups. These are not things people have trouble eating in general. They just have trouble saying, okay, this is my main course. I'm making a massive vegetable soup. This is the main course tonight, and then I'll take it for lunch tomorrow too.
This review of your book that I mentioned by Carolyn Cummins, she says that you call couscous pasta, and she says it's a whole grain. I mean, people.
She's wrong. She's totally
that's what
wrong.
I thought.
She could call up. We'll argue about it. She's completely wrong. It's a hand rolled pasta. Well, machine rolled now, but.
I'll give the number, and if she's listening, let her call.
Let her call up.
We invite you to call us and join award-winning author Mark Bittman, who's here with us in studio. Maybe some of you have some recipes that fall along the lines of what Mark has outlined here and what he's brought to bear from his experiences in the kitchen, which are manifold and deep. And we welcome your phone calls. It's 866-733-6786, and that number will work whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite. Feel free to join the program. A lot of Mark Bittman fans out there, and you may just want to talk with him, but certainly we'd welcome some thoughts about what we're talking about. And what we're talking about is not only food that's healthier and it's more sustainable for the planet, but also food that will, do something about this current system of animal husbandry, which is pretty harmful. I think we can all be in agreement on that. Toll free 866-733-6786 or send us an email, forum@kqed.org, or post a question or comment on our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment. And the book again is The Food Matters Cookbook, 500 Revolutionary Recipes for Better Living. There's that old community organizing using the word revolutionary. The Saul Alinsky training.
You know, it's funny. I can't remember what the reading line was right as we were going to press. I said, you know what? I'm completely sold on this book. I think we use the revolutionary word, which is obviously hyperbolic, but they're – it's an unusual book. I think there's a lot of stuff in there that you won't find elsewhere.
As somebody who just recently put out a book, I'm afraid I've learned that hyperbole does sell books.
Yeah, magazines too.
Let me go to our callers. And Nancy, you're up first. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, my husband and I stopped eating red meat about, 25 plus years ago. And at first it was really difficult. But, of course, now, you know, I don't even think about it. And I did it partly because I thought it would be better for my digestion, and because 25 years ago you didn't think that much about the planet, but mostly because I couldn't take killing animals anymore, although we do eat chicken and fish occasionally, and my husband would definitely become a vegetarian. For me, I'm not crazy about vegetables, although he does make sure I eat them every night. But, you know, there are ways of doing this, and even though it's difficult at first, it does get easier.
Well said.
So
I'm sure for many of those who have gone along the trajectory you have, Nancy, and thank you for that call. We'll go to more calls. We'll go to Vallejo. Paul, hi.
Hi. I'm a big fan of Mr. Bittman. Thank you very much for being on the show. And I'd just like to comment, because Michael keeps talking about how to find substitutes for meat and so on and so forth, the way to change your diet.
Michael is talking as an unregenerate carnivore, I'm afraid. Yeah,
right. Well, the way that you find way to, that's okay. The way to find to change your diet, if one wants to, is to find what you like to eat and not worry about finding substitutes. There's lots of gluten products that the Chinese use and so forth, seitan, as we call it, and people can find meat substitutes. But like Mark said, if you're looking for a tofu on a hot dog bun, you're just, you know, like playing with your mind. The way to do it is find what you like to eat, go for that, and begin to change your diet in that way.
Mark Bittman, agree with the sentiment.
No,
there.
I do, but I mean, again, my comment is if you want to eat meat, just eat less of it. I mean, I have no problem with eating meat. I mean, I go.
Absolutely. Eat less to eat more.
That's right. I mean, I've been talking around the country. So there's an audience of some number of hundreds of people, as there will be tonight. And you say, how many people are vegan in the audience? And there are 6 or 12 or maybe 20. And you say, how many people intend to become vegan? And there are 20 or maybe 30. And then you say, how many people intend to eat less meat? And everybody raises their hand. And I think that is the reigning sentiment at the moment. People, perhaps like yourself, have trouble imagining how to do that. My job is to help you figure it out, I guess.
Of course, you're talking to audiences who are maybe a little more politically conscious and aware of what meat does to the planet. And everything. I mean, I certainly am, which is why I'd like to eat less meat and think about eating less meat. I mean, I wonder if you went out into the NASCAR boondocks, whatever, you know, heartland.
You know, I was in St. Louis. I was in Minneapolis. I mean, it's not as if you go to these places and everybody is dumb. You go to these places and maybe there's a different percentage of aware people than there are in places like San Francisco and New York. But there's people are understanding this.
We're going to talk more with Mark Bittman. You do, because that means we're going to our one and only break. We'll be back with your calls and emails for our guests. The new book is The Food Matters Cookbook. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and in his new book, Food Matters, 500 Revolutionary Recipes for Better Living, New York Times food writer Mark Bittman urges Americans toward a more plant-based diet. He takes on factory farming and the health impacts of a diet too heavy on meat and processed foods, but where others leave us to figure out how to change our habits, he provides recipes for a healthy and environmentally sustainable diet. And we're going to go to your calls and emails. Let's go to this email first from Jody, author of a book called Cooking from the Farmer's Market, Eggs and New Flavors for Vegetables. We're getting a nice plug-in for you, Jody. She writes, I'm a local cooking teacher and food writer here in San Francisco. I'm passionate about introducing cooking into people's lives and consider myself a success when my students tell me they are cooking more at home. I want to tell Mr. Bittman that his book, How to Cook Everything, has not only inspired what I teach, but has, in my opinion, become our generation's joy of cooking. Even with three of my own cookbooks under my belt, How to Cook Everything is the book I most recommend to my students who are looking for one tome to reference on a day-to-day basis. His New York Times video series has set the bar high for people like me. I love his real-life approach to eating well while keeping his recipes simple and delicious. I can only hope as my own career progresses that I can continue to see Mr. Bittman as my mentor. Keep up the good work. This is from Jody Bittman. No, Jody is
it? It wasn't a question, but I do have my checkbook out. Jody, what's her last name?
Well, she's doing PR for you. No, that's actually, it's very heartwarming to get those kind of emails. Let's see what we got on our website. Lee writes, factory farming, animals treated like widgets is a crime against nature. If there was a God, we'd be smoked and seared for it. I am not referring to eating animals, but eating animals raised in factory farms where they never see the sky, touch the grass, or even for 1 minute have normalcy in their lives. Thanks to you and Michael Pollan and Jonathan Safran Foer for raising the issue in popular culture.
Actually, that raising animals as widgets is a line I use also, and I think that that is, you know, many people have seen Food Inc. and other movies. Many people have seen 60 Minute spots with this stuff. It's quite graphic and quite horrible.
And Reg Schlosser.
Right, and Reg Schlosser. But you know, when you think, okay, what is the most efficient efficiency? And, you know, the concentration camps were about efficiency also. What is the most efficient way to raise animals without caring about the quality of the product, the life of the animal, or the effect it has on the earth, or the effect it has on the consumer, or the effect it has on the workers, for that matter? That's what we're doing. The most efficient thing possible without caring about anything else. And that is really, it is a crime.
Here's Lauren, who writes, Weston Price, DDS, has been called the Darwin of nutrition because his work in the 30s to show how traditional cultures around the world, despite the wide diversity of actual foods, all had similar fundamentals. Meat, especially the organs and marrow, fermented foods like sauerkraut, yogurt, real pickles, etc., low carbohydrates. They are cause of bad fat, animal fat from pastured animals, rich in DHA, EPA. It turns out that nearly all our cells prefer to burn fat for energy. Red blood cells being the exception, and we can only store 2,000 calories of glucose in our muscle tissue and liver because we didn't evolve on high-carb foods. What does Mark think about Weston Price's book?
There's not much in that statement I would disagree with. I think that it's important, you know, as I've said, I think that it's important to eat a variety of natural and unprocessed foods, and that's what I'm hearing here. I'm certainly not in favor of people sitting around gorging on potato chips all day long, which is what a high-carb diet is like.
Lauren writes, I came upon Food Matters in a bookstore the other day, and having heard buzz about it, decided to flip through it. I opened randomly to a few different recipes, and they all had meat as the main feature of the dish. One was salmon, another was chicken, and so on. Why did Mr. Bittman decide to include meat-centric recipes in this book, given the goal, increasing the proportion of plant-based foods in people's diets and advocating for more plant-centric meals, and given the wide availability of meat-centric recipes, including in many of Mr. Bittman's other books already in circulation? Wouldn't it make more sense to put out another plant-based recipe collection to increase their accessibility among the general population?
I would suggest that that person buy How to Cook Everything Vegetarian, because it sounds like that's what she's after. I don't think it is meat-centric. There is meat in it. And in fact, it's plant-centric, Food Matters Cookbook.
Well, the purest vegans.
Now I'm sounding defensive. Sorry.
No, you don't have to sound. The purest vegans will make you sound that way. Let me get to our callers. And Patrick, you're up first. Good morning.
Good morning. Hi, Mark. I was really happy to hear you on the show today. I had seen your on your Spanish travels, the show that you did with Mario, and I really enjoyed that. My question is, I had lived in Spain for a number of years. I've married a Spanish woman, and we've really imported that diet into our house. And what I've noticed over a long time is that we're eating two-thirds of our diet is around vegetables, although it's we just don't feel like we're sacrificing anything. What we're eating from a vegetable that's cooked, a lot of olive oil, usually prepared an hour to maybe 2 hours ahead of mealtime. And that's made it very easy for us to move towards a more vegetable-centric diet. My question really to you is, when you were in Spain, and I'm sure you spent a lot of time there, what did you find that they were doing right?
You know, it's funny. It sounds like you have a really better impression of Spain than I did. But I think it was because I was doing television. we were constantly after, you know, Hamoni Berico and all these kind of glamorous products, lots of fish, lots of meat. And I didn't, you know, you're describing a very Mediterranean diet. And I think that is the most accessible kind of diet for most Americans who are looking to get away from a meat-based diet. But, my experience in Spain was actually not as great from a food perspective as experiences I've had in France and Italy. Not that the show wasn't fun, obviously it was, but as a sort of model for lifestyle, I would say Italy remains the one to look at.
Let me thank the caller and go on to another caller. That's Peter. Hi.
Hi, gentlemen. Good morning. Thank you very much for this show. I just wanted to report a personal experience that many people possibly could identify with. But I'm thinking, too, as I look at the package that I'm going to talk about, the targeting of children, with all these wonderful, fancy colors and little animals. This is a little package called Little Debbie Snacks Zebra Cakes. And a friend of mine came by the other day and gave me this package as a gift. And there are six little individually wrapped frosted muffins. And I saved them for a week or 10 days. And I said, okay, you know, let me have one of these as a treat. And I was feeling really great. And I ate this thing. It tasted great. I really thoroughly enjoyed it from the taste point of view. And I just realized that I felt totally messed up for about an hour. And I had to... Also, not only my brain was really altered by all this heavy influx of sugar and stuff, but I just had to eat lettuce and celery and tomato, you know, and fresh food to kind of counteract this huge experience that had been foisted on me in the name of cuteness.
You've given us the antidote for the cupcake here.
Cuteness.
You know,
was it Michael Pollan that said never, his grandmother said never eat anything with more than 7 ingredients? I just counted the ingredients, and sure enough, there are 41, including many things that are very hard to pronounce, so... I just think, thank you very much for bringing this to people's attention.
Thank you for your cupcake story. Appreciate that. You and your book are really down on junk food, and again, it's a serious issue to you.
Well, the Twinkie defense is real, you know. Everybody's had the experience. Everybody's had the experience of eating too much sugar and feeling really, really bad. But I think more, and so we can learn from that. But
or winding up with diabetes like yours truly from eating too much sugar.
Winding up with diabetes. But
and carbs.
But the thing about processed foods is that you wind up with, I was given a snack on the airplane the other day, and they almost couldn't fit the ingredient list on the label. I mean, because it was a very small package. So, I mean, this thing of 41 ingredients, that's quite a
little cupcake, he said, too.
That's quite a number. And no doubt 37 of them are things that don't exist in nature, maybe all 41. So why do you want to eat that? Why would you want to eat something that you couldn't conceive of making yourself? I mean, if you can't imagine how it's made, why would you want to eat that? This isn't a shoe you're putting on your foot. This is, you know, you're putting this in your body.
We go on to more calls. Jane, join us. Hi.
Oh, good morning. Thank you. This is really a great show. I wanted to ask your guest about bread and grains. There's a store in all over Marin County, which will go nameless unless you want me to mention it. And I can't find more than one whole grain cracker or bread in the store. And there's one cracker that they carry. It says stoned wheat cracker. And I wrote them a letter and told them that they were fooling the public by calling it stoned, because everybody thinks that whenever it's stoned, then it's healthy. But stoned, first of all, would you talk about the fact that wheat is flour, and it's usually white flour in bread?
Yes.
And, you know, that's really all that I want to talk about, but the fact that whole-grained whole wheat is far different than wheat bread, which is white flour. And there are whole-grain hot dog buns on the market, actually.
I totally agree. There's a big difference between whole grains and processed grains. And again, you know, what I talk about is trying to stay away from processed foods. So in general, but yes, it is a shame that manufacturers are allowed to say wheat bread even though wheat doesn't mean – it just means that the origin is wheat, but it can be processed to death and still be called wheat bread. And multigrain doesn't mean very much. And there are a lot of phrases that just don't mean anything. What you want is – yeah, what you want is whole grain bread in general. Stone wheat thins were once a favorite of mine 30 years ago, and then I – but I too was fooled.
Do you love to shop?
I think that shopping is really, really important. Sometimes I think it's a pain in the neck. But I think here's what I like to do. I like to I'd say once or twice a year I go to a really, really good store that has really good bulk foods. And I buy $200 worth, which is really enough for months and months for me of nuts and grains and stuff like that, dried beans. And then I try to keep a well-stocked pantry with spices and pasta and olive oil and blah, blah, blah. And I try to keep a well-stocked refrigerator with things that keep for a while. And then I go and make lightning raids on the supermarket and I buy fresh vegetables and I buy, you know, a piece of fish or a piece of meat or whatever. And I don't have to do it all that often. And it doesn't have to be that big a deal. Well, of course, you need toilet paper and saran wrap and stuff, but that's not really food shopping.
When you're talking about spices, Armand, a listener in Oakland, says, if people don't know about all the wonderful variety of spices and herbs available and only use salt and pepper, even good beef can be boring. Interesting point. You want some fan stuff here?
I'm not asking for it.
Well, I'm asking if you want it, and you don't have to ask for it. Melissa says, I'm a big fan of Mark's, and I love his samosa recipe and the how to cook everything. I really love his Kitchen Express and wish there were more books in that style. Well, there is. It's a new one, not quite that style, but a new cookbook. Susan says, hi, Mark. Just want to tell you that the first and only cookbook I just gave my 21-year-old son as he moved into his new apartment in San Francisco is the newest edition of How to Cook Everything. Thank you so much for providing a far superior option for my son than having to call his mother for the answers provided. And Joan says, I often cook brown rice as the basis of dinner. Mushrooms, asparagus, summer squash all make delicious toppings. Also, polenta is a good base for these toppings.
Totally agree. I would say I'd point out that one thing that I like, that I like to have whole grains for breakfast, and I will wake up and throw on a huge pot of brown rice or wheat berries or whatever, and then that takes a while to do, but then it's there for the rest of the week, and all that stuff keeps all week long. Whole grains and beans you cook on Sunday or Monday, and they're there all week.
You're living in Manhattan?
Yeah.
Where do you go to farmers markets these days in Manhattan?
Well, we have Union Square, which is really good, and it's especially good in August through October. But I do. I really do most of my shopping locally. I mean, when I say locally, I mean in the local supermarket or in Fairway, which is near my house also.
Jason says, some of my friends are obsessed with getting enough protein and therefore eat a ton of meat. Are the protein requirements exaggerated? Are any Americans, even vegans, at risk of protein deficiency?
I think you'd have to work. The short answer is you'd have to work really, really hard to be protein deficient. It's almost as if Americans get enough by osmosis. The long answer or longer answer is that the protein requirements that the USDA basically doubled the protein requirement from their research. This was years and years ago. From their research basically said we need 110 grams of protein a day when they had found that we needed 50 or 60. And I think that's probably high. So I think if you're getting 20 or 30 grams of protein a day, which is not much, you're fine.
Another listener, and this is probably an email that's almost been replicated whenever we do these kinds of programs that address questions about whether meat is healthy for us and how much we should cut down on meat and so forth. This is a listener who says, as a lifelong omnivore, I radically changed my diet, essentially became vegan a couple of years back due to a health issue. I thought eschewing red meat would be difficult, but it really was not. Indeed, the key is imaginative and skillful preparation of high-quality foods. I've backed away from complete veganism since then, but my appetite for red meat is considerably less, having been weaned from it.
Well, this is, he sounds like me. I mean, I never came close to being a complete vegan, but I think I probably eat a third as much meat as I used to.
But you grew up in a meat and potatoes home?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Well, meat and potatoes and corned beef sandwiches for lunch whenever I could get them.
And then corned beef in New York is well worth getting, if I may say so.
Anyway.
Well, I don't know. It's still at the stage you can get really good corned beef. John joins us from San Jose. Hi, John.
Good morning. Thank you for consistently great radio.
Thank you.
What we try to do in our house is to better utilize the food we do eat. And whenever we cook a chicken, while we're eating, the rest of the bones of the chicken, the carcass of the chicken, is in a pot of water and it's boiling. And then we peel the meat off of it. And then we come around and cook beans with it a couple days later so that the beans tend to have a little bit more of a flavor. And by the time we throw away the bones, man, there's nothing on them. And then during the winter, we try to make better use of fresh sprouts to supplement our fresh vegetables.
Yeah, that makes sense. The meat thing, if you think about it, I mean, we really have a problem with oversupply, that it's cheap, and it's cheap because it's subsidized. It's also cheap because it's crap, not to put too fine a point on it. But we have too much, and it's become too easy, and it's become too convenient. And, you know, addiction is a strong word, so I won't use it. But we're certainly habituated to be eating lots of meat. But traditionally, of course, meat was a treasure, and meat was a treat, and meat was something that you really ate sparingly because you couldn't get that much of it. And that's the way it ought to be.
And we thank the caller and go to Russell next. Thanks for waiting, Russell. You're on.
Hey, thanks for having me. I just want to say to Mark that I'm a huge fan. My wife and I love your book. We like watching your videos on the New York Times. So I'm really honored to be able to call in. My question's about how to cook everything. Lately there's been a lot of stuff coming out about whole grains, how it's much more important to eat whole grains as opposed to processed foods and white flour. The problem is we, in our quest to have an entirely whole grain diet, we open up your book and a lot of your recipes call for white flour. And, sometimes you'll have a footnote for there's a whole grain version of this where you put maybe 25% wheat flour in, but the rest, 75%, say, is still white flour. So what are your thoughts on that? Was that written before you sort of came around to the whole grain point of view? Because throwing a bunch of white flour in any recipes is almost akin to like throwing in a pile of cane sugar, is it not?
I wouldn't disagree with that. I said at the top of the show, and I'll say this again, one of my priorities is getting people cooking. So I feel like if I can get people into the kitchen, even if they're using more traditional ingredients like white flour, it's still better than them eating fast food, processed food,
absolutely,
takeout food. So that's a primary goal. I would say, I still cook. I mean, I when I bake bread, I wind up putting some white flour in it a lot of the time, not all the time, because I like what it does. But I would say, yes, I've moved forward. And I would say, I guess I have a bunch of different audiences, but the primary goal is really to get people cooking and then to get them cooking better.
Thank you, Russell.
I think that's a great good. Thank you.
Good
to hear from you. Here's a listener who says, I eat lots of beans and stews with reduced meat, et cetera. I started using a pressure cooker a while back. Takes a half hour cook time for beans in the pressure cooker, and the taste seems better to me than slow cook.
Well, there's nothing nothing to say bad about pressure cookers except that most people don't use them. So if you use one and you're happy with it, I'm happy for you. But I have a small kitchen. So to me, I want to make do. I want to get the most out of every piece of equipment that I have. So for me, it's worth it to spend an hour and a half to cook beans to not have a pressure cooker in the house. But, and you can do it however you want. It doesn't matter to me. Just do it.
To each their own. Just get in the kitchen is what you're saying. Here's another listener, Katie, who says, I'm listening to this program and I'm struck by the similarities between Mark's recommendations and the Weight Watchers program I've been following for over 10 years. I've learned that 3 ounces of red meat, poultry, or fish is a serving, and have learned how to cook satisfying meals that support these portion sizes. The recipes I use are strikingly similar to Mark's. I'm excited to see Mark's recipes. They sound delicious. I'm also encouraged by his suggestions on reducing but not eliminating meat from meals, as my husband is quite resistant to meatless meals.
Oh, those husbands. Those devilish husbands. I think Weight Watchers, a lot of what Weight Watchers says makes sense, and not that there's any reason to attack them, but the fact that they have to then sell you Weight Watchers branded foods is that's where it sticks in my craw a bit. But hey.
Well, speaking about sticking in the craw, here's a listener who says, let's not just eat less meat and more humane, better quality meats, but eat the parts less sought after. Highly nutritious stocks can be made just from bones and cartilage, but also hooves or feet and skin of any animal. Organ meats, especially liver, have plentiful supplies of crucial vitamins, and you can feel better that you're using the whole animal.
Well, it's nose-to-tail cooking, as it's trendily called. again, makes perfect sense. There was a time when animals were not plentiful and you had to eat every single part of the animal. Now we've become completely spoiled. And, you know, we ship chicken thighs to Russia because Americans won't eat dark meat chicken. They'll only eat breasts. So, you know, we're raising God knows how many billions more chickens so that we can eat only white meat, God, you know, let alone feet or tongues or other things that are completely edible.
White meat is healthier, though, isn't it?
Don't even go there.
No. All right. I'm thinking about how I, like I said, I'm diabetic, but I always liked milk chocolate much more than semi-sweet or dark chocolate, which is healthier, of course. I mean, there are all those distinctions.
Well, I don't, you know what? I don't worry about those distinctions so much. You know, not to sound like a broken record, but I really think the basic division is between unprocessed plants and everything else. Mm-hmm. And to worry about the distinction between milk chocolate and dark chocolate is really – that's a red herring. Not, I'm sorry that I'm using all these food – I wonder – is there something besides a red herring? That's a dead end. What you need to worry about is the amount of unprocessed plants you put in your body. If you increase that, you don't have to think about that much else.
Emilio, you're on with us on Forum. Good morning.
Hi, thank you very much. I enjoy your show. I'm a long-time listener. I guess I've fallen kind of in the camp of everybody else that's been calling. I hate to cook. My wife and I do not cook. So are we doomed? Are we among the masses that should be walking into the oven?
I wouldn't say you're doomed, but I think of course, I don't know what you eat. You can eat fine if you go into the right restaurants or you shop from the supermarket and eat raw food. I mean, there's a variety of different strategies that'll work besides cooking. But if you say you hate cooking, I have to believe you. I guess I'd be eating in a lot of Asian restaurants if I were you.
Well, you can eat a lot more healthy if you prepare your own food.
Well, you know,
because of what restaurants put into food often, yeah?
Yeah, well, people tend not to poison themselves if they have control over what's going into their bodies. But as the minute you let someone else cook food for you, you don't know what's in it. And I want to know what's in it.
Let me thank you, Emilio. And we go to Sunnyvale and Nubjot. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Hi.
Hi. Well, I just have a comment. I tend to cook a lot at home. I have a family. But recently, and I turned vegetarian about 10 years ago now. Recently, I was looking for jobs, and I currently am also. But in the second round, when their in-house interviews and the companies invite you for dinner, I wasn't given an option, but I was just told this is a restaurant we're meeting at, and it turned out it was a steakhouse. So I didn't want to call the firm and, you know, tell them that, hey, I have a problem. So obviously, you know.
Why not? It's very commonplace now. Oh, it's for people to say I'm a vegetarian or I'm a vegan, isn't it?
Right. But, you know, it's just I didn't think it was – well, because, you know, I did look at the restaurant menu and everything was – everything had meat in it. And I just, I don't know, I didn't want them to change their plans only because of me. So what I did was I actually called the restaurant beforehand and I asked them, like, hey, this is the case. I can't make them change their mind, of course, about the restaurant. So, you know, I like this. Can you make a vegetarian version of it? And, you know, they were very happy to accommodate me. So, you know, there was a chicken dish. I was like, hey, can you make this without chicken? And they were like, yeah, sure, you know, we can do that. And then we have salads, and if you don't want to eat the chicken or anything else, we can do that for you also. So they were very accommodating. So I guess successful dinner.
That's a happy ending story. Did you get the job?
I'll hear back from them in a week, so we'll find out.
Good luck.
Good luck indeed, and thank you for the call. Here's listener says, hello, guys. Mark, do you have any suggestions for a vegetable matter that has a meaty consistency when barbecued? I think eggplant may be close, but not close enough. I'm thinking something to replace pulled pork.
I was going to suggest eggplant. Mushrooms are also great. Grilled, well, pulled pork. There's not a lot of things you can get that are going to be like pulled pork.
Another listener writes, I consider myself a non-practicing vegan, though I am omnivore. I constantly strive to eat less meat when cooking or at restaurants. What do you suggest about eating out? Asian restaurants are not a problem. They use meat as a condiment. But in a recent trip to France, bistro food was very meat-centric. How do you get less meat without becoming vegetarian?
Well, France is kind of difficult. I mean, what I do in restaurants is, you know, there's the strategy number one is give up and enjoy yourself. Strategy number two is, you know, order soup and salad and eat some bread and be happy with that. So it's kind of either or. I mean, when you're stuck in a situation like that, you can decide, I'm going to fight the good fight and do the best I can. Or, well, maybe this is one of those times where I'm going to eat a steak.
Here's a listener named Faye who says, many vegetarian prepared foods, tofu, seitan, and other soy-based foods commonly have 800 milligrams of sodium and high potassium. That's not healthy.
As I said, I'm not in favor of meat substitutes or anything processed like that. If you can't make it at home, I'm not interested in it. You can make seitan yourself, and you can make it as low sodium as you want to.
Let's get you on, Dan, while we have a little bit of time left. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, yeah. So, hey, thanks a lot for having me on the show. And, Mark, I'm a big fan of your work.
My
question has to do with the work of Gary Taub and your feeling about it and how it has influenced your own thinking. Taub is the guy who has argued
that all carbohydrates are bad, right?
That's pretty much
it. No, that all carbohydrates are bad. I think it's more that he's argued that the source, that the sort of root cause of the diseases of civilization, obesity, heart disease, diabetes, lies in the insulin response to carbohydrates. So particularly simple carbohydrates that trigger a higher insulin response would be responsible for fat storage, insulin resistance.
Well, he's basically down on bad carbs. Let's get Mark Bittman's response.
Well, I mean, that's also what I believe him to be saying. When I read his book, my problem with it was that I didn't think he distinguished enough between whole grains and not whole grains. I mean, I agree that processed carbs may not be the work of the devil, but in large quantities are not real good for you. But whole grains, I don't see people having the same kind of problems who are on high whole grain diets.
Let me thank the caller. Too bad we're out of time here. We had a caller who said, I used to be a vegan, now I switch back to meat. It's healthier.
Well, there's another argument. Well, another country heard from.
We've heard from a number of countries thanks to you this morning, and it's been a pleasure to have you on. And again, Mark Bittman's new book is out. It's available, The Food Matters Cookbook. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.